Chapter 13. Charlie read, lying on his bed at the Central Hotel, Glasgow. I have just heard from Romilius that the man Jesus is said to have performed another miracle. I could be wrong about the thing that happened at the wedding. Now everybody tells the story of how Jesus turned the water into wine. Even Romilius has heard of it. He came to see me tonight and asked if I really thought this was true magic. I told him I was not sure, and that at the time I thought it was a joke. Now there is a story that Jesus has cured a blind man, and also that he has raised a man called Lazarus from the dead. That was as far as Charlie got before his eyes drooped, and he slid into a deep sleep. The events of the day had taken their toll, and he did not wake until the phone rang just before midnight. "Mr. Gauntlet?" "A woman. Who wants him?"
"This is Sister Marks, Mr. Gauntlet. We met when you came in to see Hilary Cook this evening. She told us where you're staying. I'm sorry about this, Mr. Gauntlet, but she's asking for you."
He sat bolt upright. "What's really wrong? What's happened to her?"
"Nothing. She's fine. But she says she needs to talk to you. She hasn't really been herself since the other fella came to see her."
"What other fella?"
"The monk. The Ring Maruki monk. Yon Father Martin."
"Father Martin? He'll be 94 at Easter," the Father Superior had said. "The old monk? The doctor? The one who's ill?"
"Must be a different Father Martin. The fellas know what you call real old. He's a bit of a muscle man. A man mountain, really. A huge fellow."
Charlie was dressed and halfway downstairs to the summoned cab when his telephone began ringing again. After having tried large hotels in Aberdeen and Edinburgh, Bex had struck lucky in Glasgow. Now the hotel operator told her that her party was not in his room. The operator made this sound very suspect, and Bex, speaking from the hotel in Switzerland close to the lake shore, asked if she could leave a message. She was simple and to the point.
"Would you tell him his bride rang?"
Then, in answer to the operator's questioning tone, she added,
No, I can't leave a number."
Within minutes of his arrival back at the hospital, that morning in Glasgow, Charlie was wearing his interrogator's hat.
"I'm sorry to get you out in the middle of the night, Mr. Gauntlet. I wouldn't normally do this kind of thing, but I was really rather alarmed."
Thus, Sister Marks, who looked as shipshape at 2 a.m. as she had when she first came on duty.
"I put her into a side ward on her own. She really hasn't been herself since the monk talked with her."
Sister Marks shepherded Gauntlet along the corridor and into a clean little room done out in institutional green. Hilary Cook lay propped up on pillows, nursing a box of tissues. She looked, Charlie reflected, more like a young, frightened rabbit than an intrepid bird woman. Her eyes were traced with red, while her nose ran damply. The fly babe that was Hilary Cook seemed to be regressing towards neurotic babe. "How now, Hilary Cook with an E? What's the matter?" He perched himself on the edge of the bed, which sagged slightly under his weight.
"Mr. Gauntlet's come to see you."
Sister Marks stated the obvious, patted Hilary's hand and left, all in a series of fluid, economical motions. "So what's going on?" he asked, a question that seemed to release a fresh wellspring of tears. "Look, I'm not so good at this comforting business."
"Then why have you come?" she wailed. "It's late, and you don't really know me."
"No, it's early in the morning. It's not late. It's early, and I do know you, because whatever the problem, I've been there, I promise you. Cubs, guides, honour, whatever."
"I think I'm underinsured."
"You ain't going to get your plane back, then. And that's not the whole story, is it? In fact, I doubt if it's a valid reason at all."
He took a deep breath and noted that she would not look him in the eyes. He thought of a line from a half-remembered poem. "The voice of your eyes is deeper than all roses."
"Listen, Hilary, you've been working for my friend Mr. Palfrey. You had a bad accident. In shock, I would think, still. And you had another visitor after I left earlier. Who was he? And what's really going on? Tell me, and I might be able to help. Don't tell me, and I definitely can't."
She wiped her eyes with a couple of balled-up tissues that she began shredding between her hands. She sniffed again, looked down, then up. This time she did look at him, and he could see the fear, and he wondered why Sister Marks had bothered him. This was a straightforward case of shock. As he stared at her, he found it difficult to think of Hilary as the girl who had piloted him out to Ring Maruki. She did not look capable of operating a child's scooter, let alone an aircraft.
She sniffed again, looked away, then back.
"I don't think you're going to like it."
Her hands were tense, almost white-knuckled. "Just tell me."
"I've been, well, very stupid. I think I've been reporting to Mr. Palfrey, but I've left bits out."
"You've been selective with the truth, Hills?"
"Yes, and I haven't told him what might be the most important thing."
"Which is?"
"Well, it's two things, really. First, I've been reporting stuff back to the Father Superior as well. I also run private errands for him, and I think that's maybe disadvantaged me."
"You've been playing both sides of the street. That's the technical term for it, Hills. That's always dangerous, whatever line of business you're in. What kind of errands do you do for Gregory?"
Gauntlet's face had gone blank, devoid of any expression. It was a trick he'd learned many years before.
"Never give him a hint," a cunning old barrister told him. "Listen to whatever's behind the words they speak. Read the body language."
They said of this lawyer that he could find, to quote William of Stratford, "tongues in trees, books in the running brooks, sermons in stones." In plain talk, he could read people, get under their skin, divine the way their waters ran, and pull their deepest fears from a pause. Charlie Gauntlet had learned some of the tricks from him, and he was the man who wrote the book.
"What kind of errands, Hills?"
Charlie asked a second time, recalling that Father Gregory had called her Hills as she lay injured in front of the massive monastery. Charlie had noted it in the invisible notebook of his mind.
"Hills, what kind of errands?"
"I took messages, carried letters, picked up things from a bank."
"Bank in Glasgow?"
"No, south, on the border."
"Concerning someone's account?" "His account? Father Gregory's account?"
"Yes, Gregory Scott's account. Accounts, really."
She gave the address of the branch of a bank on the border town of Melrose, some 40 miles south of Edinburgh. Unaccountably, the words of an Elton John song passed soundlessly through Charlie's mind.
"More than one? More than one account?"
"Yes, I noted three. There were three different accounts I serviced."
She looked up at him, and he saw that she was angry with herself.
"I wouldn't be telling you this if I didn't think it had put me in danger."
"Yes, you said he had money. So you serviced three bank accounts?"
"Yes."
"Doing what?"
"Taking letters to the bank, putting money in, drawing money out. Or at least I took it to be money. He implied it was money. I also left things to be picked up."
"What kind of things?"
"Letters, documents. I saw a pile of letters once in his office on Ringmarookie in the monastery. He said they would be dealt with by the bank, picked up."
"You took money from him? From Gregory Scott, the Father Superior? You took money from Ringmarookie?"
His expression shifted slightly. For a second he was aware of a puzzled look crossing his face, quick as a neon blink.
"Yes, several times."
"So," Charles wondered, "where did that money come from? There was no open trade on Ringmarookie."
"Checks, I suppose. That's what you mean by money?"
"No, no, there were sealed jiffy bags, mailers stuffed full of cash. You could feel it. I'm talking mega pounds. This wasn't the Sunday collection for matins, right?"
"And you took money to him as well?"
"No, I took letters, some in envelopes sealed with wax. My guess was that he had mail sent to the bank. I thought the bank sealed it in these big white envelopes."
Charlie grunted. "Anything else?"
"I posted letters for him."
"Ever look at them?"
"I looked at the addressee sometimes."
"Well, I wasn't asking if you steamed them open."
She seemed to think this was funny, smiling for the first time.
"You remember any of the addresses?"
"They were mostly for abroad. Difficult abroad names. Russia, I think, some of them."
"Any have names like eye tests?"
"Yes. Yes, how did you guess?"
"I know a little bit more about Gregory Scott than you do. Or I suspect I know more."
He sucked his teeth audibly. It was an irritating habit, he thought, then grinned to himself.
Those monks had got some irritating habits, he thought.